It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We turn now to that $350 billion fund to help small businesses and its workers get through the shutdown.
It will be up to Congress to restock it.
But Democrats blocking that move this morning.
They asked for $250 billion in 48 hours. I said, well, I don't think so. They objected, and I congratulate the Senate Democrats.
Speaker Pelosi, what are you going to share with us from your home?
Chocolate candy.
Thousands have been forced to wait for hours at food banks all across the country.
This is...
Oh, my.
Chocolate, and then we have some other chocolate here. We just got to restock the ice cream.
You don't want to eat up everything all at one time.
I can't do it much longer. I am trying so hard.
We're, shall we say, enjoying.
Having to admit that, yeah, we're starving, and
I like it better than anything else.
Taping this segment, there are 22 million people out.
This specific program is about stopping job losses today.
This is hurting people bad.
Other people in our family look for some other flavors, but...
Right now, it's survival move. You don't know where that next something else is going to come from.
I don't know what I would have done if ice cream were not invented. I just wonder...
Sandy Rios with you this morning. I wanted you to hear that again. That's a really powerful video. With no exaggeration, so many of the political, you know, commercials exaggerate something for purpose or have some insidious voice or some ominous music. But honestly, that captures the reality. It was put in really very well this morning in the USA Today. Glenn Harlan Reynolds writes an article about how they really are two Americas. There are Americans who are losing their work, losing their jobs, getting desperate to support their families. And then there's the other America that's fine. They're getting government paychecks. They're government officials. They work for foundations, and they're just fine. And they're not patient at all. In fact, they're shaming the other group who are coming out in protest. And so then we have the other thing going on, which is more and more draconian measures. I want you to hear what the mayor of New York had to say just yesterday, Bill de Blasio. Let's listen.
When you see a crowd, when you see a line that's not distanced, when you see a supermarket that's too crowded, anything, you can report it right away so we can get help there to fix the problem. And now it's as simple as taking a photo. All you got to do is take the photo and put the location with it and bang, send a photo like this, and we will make sure that enforcement comes right away.
So that's Bill de Blasio. And what he's talking about is Soviet-style encouraging people to watch their neighbors and report them. Just take out your phone, take a picture, and let the authorities know. This is really very stunning stuff. Martha McCallum did an interview with a person who has developed, a CEO of a company, who's developed a bracelet which will help governments keep track of people like you and me. And then to bring it home, we talked yesterday about that rally in Alabama, where people from Alabama were going to drive their cars around the Capitol. It was very well planned. Becky Gerritsen, who's the head of Eagle Forum in Alabama, was organizing it. She had met with police and state police, and they'd gotten permission. They had the route all marked out. It was supposed to be kind of encouraging. Some sort of a committee had decided on a set of things to do in order to open up the economy in Alabama. And when they got to the protest, it was an encouragement for the government to the governor to sign this document. When they got there, all the streets were blocked off. They could not get anywhere near. They'd shut everything off. They said it was because of construction, but the streets were brand new. There was no construction. And so people in that rally yesterday in Alabama got so upset they got out of their cars, which is not what they had intended to do. And some of them stayed in their cars and honked their horns and were ticketed because they were honking their horns. And Becky Gerritsen was told that this is because someone higher up or higher-ups had decided, that they didn't have a right to let their voices be heard. We think maybe, I'm just telling you, I think it's from the governor's office because she doesn't want to sign this order. We are in changing, frustrating, really frightening times. And so we're going to do a special show this morning. I want to introduce to you right away this morning, Kevin Freeman. Kevin is the host of Economic War Room on the Blaze. It's the Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman on Blaze TV. Kevin has been a frequent guest, and I've known him for a very long time. I have tremendous respect for him. He has been producing these incredible shows on Economic War Room about how we should respond to this and the dangers that we're facing. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. Always good to be with you.
Kevin, I've given a few, you know, random examples this morning of what's just happened in the last, you know, few hours, 2 days, maybe a day at the most. How would you quantify what's happening? Now, I'm not talking about coronavirus. I'm talking about the economic impact. How would you capsulize what's happening right now as you see it?
Well, as you know, Sandy, I believe that we've been in an economic war with China for quite some time. And as we're fighting an economic war with China and with progressive leftists here at home, we've essentially told our economy to stand down. It is devastating. We're watching people not only lose jobs and businesses they built over decades, but people losing hope. And it's very, very sad. America, the thing that we believe in, the America that we believe in, requires that you have individual liberty and you have economic liberty. Without economic liberty, it's impossible to have political liberty. That's just a fact.
You know, Kevin, I was just reading this morning. Well, first of all, you might know this, and I wish I knew more. This is the third day I've mentioned this because I only know there is one small business owner in Oklahoma who has taken his own life. But we don't know what his name is. That's from inside information, and I don't know anything more about that. But I did read that in Tennessee, more people died of suicide last week than coronavirus. Knox County Mayor Glenn Jacobs revealed they had had 9 suspected suicides in under 48 hours. Their director of the Knox County Health Department, Dr. Martha Buchanan, said, "That's startling and disturbing and really, really challenging to think about how some of the things we have to do as a community right now could be contributing to these things." If you give the rest of the stats, you can see that it's really outlandish for that small county. And so we are seeing the real signs and the real costs of this. You know, I'd be curious to know, Kevin, you talk a lot about just all things economic, and one thing that you talk about, we've spoken about before, is oil. Oil went into negative yesterday where, you know, they would pay you to take their oil, theoretically. What does that mean? That's just one of the fallouts from this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because we've destroyed demand. We're destroying demand for restaurants. We're destroying demand for hotels and airlines. All the things that we enjoy as Americans have just been wiped out. Oil is a sad casualty of this. We built an incredible fracking industry that made America energy independent, so we would never again have to worry about what the Saudis did or what the Russians did, and that has been wiped out with bankruptcies and everything else. And the reason is that if there's no demand for the oil on the other side and you're pumping it out of the ground, you have to do something with it. All the storage is full. What do you do with it? You pay somebody to haul it off like it was junk, and that's why it went into negative territory.
The other thing that concerns me right now, and I am going to introduce our next guest in a second, I just want to lay some groundwork. I have said often that talking about coverage and the reason why people are afraid, and I've actually said to the White House, the reason people are afraid is because of the daily briefings have been like nightmare scenarios. We've heard, you know, 200,000 Americans are going to perish. We heard that every day from Dr. Fauci and Deborah Burke, and we heard these horrendous predictions, and it scared everyone to death. That's why they're scared. And I have made the point that I think Fox has been as bad. Not all their hosts. Some of their hosts have been the best. But their news outlet they've done a steady drip of danger. And today on their homepage, Kevin, these are the three headlines that struck me, and they were three of the top headlines. The CDC warns of a second wave later this year. It explains how it could be even more deadly. And then we have one that says, Ohio man dies from coronavirus after his online posts calling it a political ploy. So they tell the story of the 60-year-old man from Marion County. Ohio, who was the only person in his county to die of coronavirus, but just a few weeks ago he was calling it a political ploy. So that's the headline. And then the third one that I just want to point out is COVID-19 treatment, hydroxychloroquine, showed no benefit. More deaths in Virginia, our VA virus study, and that's coming out from the National Institute for Health. Kevin, I guess I've lost so much trust that I don't trust stories like that anymore. That seems just very convenient, don't you think?
Well, it's unfortunate because the coronavirus is a deadly disease. People have died, will die. It's very sad, and it is novel. And the Chinese started this, and they did not they were not honest with the world, and as a result, people are unnecessarily dying. We could have stopped this. But having said that, there are second-order consequences to every action, and the action of shutting down our economy, as you pointed out, could cause the cost of more lives than if we'd left the economy open in some cases, and it's a case-by-case basis. So when we put our seven steps to reopening the economy, the step number one was you have to shelter the vulnerable because it's tragic. Everybody's going to know somebody who lost someone, or you may personally feel that sense of loss. But on the other hand, it may be one in 400 people or something that gets the virus, but it's going to be one in five that loses their job. And that's the really tragic part. And so that's why we said we have to have a data-driven response, and I know who your next guest is, that data-driven response is absolutely essential to addressing this crisis properly so we save as many lives as possible.
In fact, let me introduce him. Benjamin Nusma is a senior engineer and founder and CEO of a company called Navigo. It's a global risk analysis company which has supported clients in 95 countries around the world. He's worked in software, development management, engineering management, and consulting for the past 15 years. Okay, so Benjamin, good morning, first of all. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. And so, Benjamin, before we get into your particular project, let me just ask you, you understand something about models, do you not?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what would you say, look, I've touched on this, but I'm not a scientist or an engineer, so how would you describe the models that have been used to give us these nightmare scenarios which caused the shutdown in the first place?
The models were very quickly put together. The models were not based on reasonable assumptions. Models were based on looking as though we looked at other countries and we used the data from the other countries in order to model our own country. We made faulty assumptions about hospitalizations as far as the overall people who have coronavirus. And the result of the faulty assumptions was that we ended up with very faulty predictions.
Wouldn't it be true, though, as I understand models, I guess I think of it as a layperson, put it very, very simply. It's like if you're trying to budget and you and your husband sit down and you project what your spending is going to be, each of you has your own a view of what might happen or what you might wish would happen in various areas. It all seems so subjective to me with modeling. Is modeling ever really and truly scientific?
So modeling is as scientific as you make it. So you can take and do modeling, say, around heart disease and around causes of heart disease. And some of the modeling that they do, especially with respect to specific kinds of medicine, can be very accurate. And some of the kinds of modeling that they do, in this case, for example, I don't think the intention was necessarily to be accurate. The intention was to provide an alarming curve, and then that curve was used to pressure legislators across the country to close their economy.
Benjamin, hey, stay tuned, and Kevin too. Kevin Freeman, again, host of Economic War Room. By the way, he's just produced some incredible pieces on this shows, and they are available at economicwarroom.com. Something that you could share, because we're not going to get to everything today. And in a second, we're going to get into what Benjamin is proposing, because he's leading a charge called Restart Now. Restart Now. And we'll get into that after this break. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The The AFA, Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is coming June 25th through the 27th. Experts have lined up to help Christians make a difference in our increasingly wicked culture. Dr. Frank Turek.
If there is a God and Jesus rose from the dead, then the God who created the universe out of nothing is Jesus.
John Uhler.
One of the hidden things that few women will talk about is the long-term effects of having had an abortion.
Abraham Hamilton III.
I'm certainly happy that they didn't seek to regulate slavery. Can you imagine, Frederick Douglass? We need to make sure that the chains you put on the slave's neck are not too tight. We're regulating murder. We know it's murder. They know it's murder. We all know it's murder. But we just won't call it that in public. No, it's a woman's right to choose.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference at Hope Church in Tupelo, June 25th through the 27th, includes a children's track as well. Learn more and register at marriagefamilylife.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Macon Delrahim, Assistant Attorney General for the Antitrust Division at the U.S. Department of Justice. Mr. Delrahim helps enforce antitrust laws in the United States. Titus 3:1 reminds us of the importance of respecting the law. Remind the people to be subject to the rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready to do whatever is good. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Macon Delrahim as he upholds antitrust laws of the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Join us as we count down to the National Day of Prayer. Details available at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now, text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. President Trump said what we all know to be true. The Democrats and the mainstream media are terrified of offending Muslims. The folks at CNN and MSNBC relish the opportunity to attack Christians and Jews, but Muslims are off limits. The propagandists and the mainstream media won't explain why they give Muslims a pass. I have a personal thought about that, but it's too explosive to share in public. On Saturday, the White House Correspondents Association confronted the president about something he retweeted. It was a post wondering if mosques celebrating Ramadan would be treated as harshly as churches that celebrated Easter. President Trump quickly responded, noting the left has a strange aversion to our Lord and Savior. They go after Christian churches, he wrote, but they don't tend to go after mosques. The president's remarks caused a good many heads to explode in the White House press briefing room. And by explode, I don't mean to imply that. Well, you know. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're talking about a few businesses that I closed down to help flatten the curve, which we have done in our state. But for us to continue to ask them to do that while they lose everything, quite honestly, there are a lot of civil repercussions of that, mental health issues. We're seeing more patients in our trauma centers in our state because people are just, you know, they're tired of it.
It was Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, and they are opening up. And Martha McCallum had him on last night, and she was actually pretty incredulous that he would be opening up. And I love Martha. I think she's one of the best, really, in terms of her discernment. But keep in mind that all of the hosts, almost all of them, are in New York. Some are in D.C., but most are in New York. They are in that place where there is a lot of fear. They're, according to the numbers that they've given us, there's a much higher percentage of death. I guess I'm such a skeptic. I do question those numbers because I know who's running the place. Bill de Blasio is giving honest numbers on New York City, and Mayor Cuomo, who hates the president, is giving honest numbers and meanwhile begging for more and more money, as both of them are. But anyway, let's give it to them. So they have a higher rate of death in New York City and New York State. And the anchors at Fox are in that atmosphere. And so their coverage of this is affected by that. So Martha then asked Brian Kemp this next question. And I want our guest, Benjamin Newsma, to respond to that. So Martha then opens the questioning up by asking this.
We just watched Dr. Deborah Birx, and she was questioned about your plan to reopen on Friday. And she said, you know, that she feels it's incumbent, and I'm paraphrasing, incumbent upon governors such as yourself to be very transparent about the data that you used to make this decision. So can you explain to everyone at home tonight, what is the data that brought you to this conclusion, especially given the fact that the deaths are still rising in Georgia? What data did you use?
All right. He goes on to give her a good answer. He talks about the medical people he's talked to. But the point I wanted to make was this, you know, how could you open up? How could you even think about that? What data did you use? And so Benjamin Newsma is, again, the founder of and CEO of Navigo, which is an organization. As an engineer, they've developed a whole program of how to restart. And we are going to get to that in a second. But Benjamin, You hear the inference of Martha's question, like what models did you use? And we were talking about that before the break. What models can a governor use to decide to open up his state? Are there such things existing?
Well, and the answer to that is absolutely, because we've built one. But the key thing about models is a concept called GIGO, or one of the key things. GIGO means garbage in, garbage out. So the information that we've put into our models is very different because it's historic. So we already know, you know, in Idaho, we've got over 70,000 jobs lost to date, right? We already know economic impact to the tune of, you know, $2.6 billion lost. So we're built on history, and it's only by understanding the history that you can effectively project forward in a meaningful fashion. The problem with the models that were used to shut down the state is that they weren't based on history, and they were based on other people's, you know, political systems, healthcare systems, other people's assumptions, other people's data collection methodologies. And so they were garbage in, and so with garbage out. In our case, you know, basically a model done correctly is basic math. It's an equation that simply describes historic data, and then you can use the same trend to project, you know, future data.
Well, give us an example. I mean, like what, like even if you do it in broad sweeping terms so that the layperson can understand the difference in your data and some that's being used in general, what's the difference? How is the outcome different?
So, yeah. So for example, with the restaurant industry, we know that the restaurant industry is massively depressed at this point. We know that in a lot of places it's either completely closed or they have people doing a small amount of takeout. Depending on the restaurant, that could equate to, you know, maybe they have 12% of their revenue still flowing in, right? So if you look at the restaurant industry and you then subtract the money that they would have made, you have the lost sales amount. And then we know how many jobs that supports in the restaurant industry. So we know the job loss that's connected with that. And so based on that, we know the more that we keep losing these sales in this particular industry, the more that you're going to have people fired, right? I mean, it's very logical, very straightforward, and it's based on history. It's based on quality data.
So you're developing these models for each state. Am I correct?
That is correct.
All right, and your project is called Restart Now, and you actually have a plan. So give us just a taste of that. I mean, we've kind of started, but what are you encouraging? Like, whose ear do you want to catch here, and what are you trying to communicate to them?
Well, what people don't realize is that a significant portion, in fact, a significant majority of the economic and job loss is happening in counties and in regions where the relative lift a risk from coronavirus is very, very low. And so when you adjust for your low and medium risk counties, you end up with something, depending on the state, it'll be a plus or minus, but, you know, and 15% of the counties are actually high risk statistically. And by statistically, I mean, if you look at the different risk factors associated with coronavirus, with the, you know, the population density is huge, the workplace interactivity levels, the preconditions, the age 60 index, smoking indexes, diabetes, heart conditions. So we know that information down to a very localized level in each of these different areas. And so the areas that are low statistical risk should be able to open immediately because this doesn't pose a substantial risk to their population from a caseload and fatality standpoint.
So are there states already that you have identified from your models and your research, besides Georgia, and South Carolina, I think, is opening up too. I don't know about total open up, but are there others that you think could do this based on your models?
Well, just about every state has areas that are low population density and statistically low risk from the virus. So, yeah, every state that we have run the data processes for so far has these areas in the state which are facing an undue burden, and we need to embrace the diversity of our country, you know, population demographically, and we need to open these places up.
Let me just say that and we're going to come back in just a second and talk about this more, but Navigo has a website where you can find out how to restart now. It's restartnow.io/. Restartnow.io/, and we'll put that on our Facebook page. And they are also trying to raise money for their efforts. And I think, Kevin, you said it well, Kevin Freeman of Economic War Room on The Blaze. Kevin, you pointed out to me why Navigo is trying to raise money from people. Why is that?
Well, the reason we want to raise it from the people is because we don't want the model skewed. When you have private industry that is big tech companies like Google, they have an incentive to skew the model a certain way. And unfortunately, we've seen that to be the case. If it comes from the federal government, it becomes political. This is independent. It's actual data. It's at the county-by-county level. And so you understand this county may have something absolutely necessary for our economy, but they're all young people who have no risk factors. We should open it now. And when you look at these risk factors, he takes into account things like suicide rates. And I'd like to point out, Vice President Pence just spoke at the graduation of the Air Force Academy. It was a thrilling, moving speech. I watched it and was moved by it. But out of the approximately 1,000 seniors that graduate, two of them, when they were completely locked down, committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And they would have had no deaths statistically had they been out operating in the economy at their age and their health and everything else. It's unlikely that any one of them would have died from the coronavirus, but two killed themselves. And that tragedy, that's among the best of us, the Air Force students, among the very best of this nation, and yet the pressure of being locked down resulted in two suicides. And that's happening in county by county all across the country. There are some counties where more people will die. There's a greater risk of loss of life from suicide than coronavirus, and Ben's got the data, and we need to get that data to our policymakers, and we need to fund it so the American people own it and not the big data companies.
All right, so all right, help me with that. Ben, help me with the your fundraising website, because I'm not even sure how to say that. It's IGG. Say that for me, please. You have it?
Okay, just a second. Can you actually say it? Because I don't have the
it's it looks to
right
me
now.
Like /// IGG dot ME /@/ restarts dash now /. So it's very confusing.
It's an Indiegogo site. And so they give you a short URL. You just go to Indiegogo and type in restart now and you'll find it.
Okay, we'll put that on our Facebook page because it is, people can't catch it with me saying it. I know they can't. So we'll put Indiegogo on our Facebook page and a way to find that. All right, Kevin, you know, I mentioned that story just to affirm what you just said about what's happening in that Tennessee county. They've had more suicides in this past month, and they were grieving over it, and they are attributing it to the side effects of this lockdown. I just want to say that we all know that when we really want to punish prisoners of war or prisoners who've committed crimes, we put them in solitary confinement. Part of our psychology, and I would say this is God from God himself, he's built us for relationship. We are not meant to be isolated. And really bad things happen to us mentally and physically when we isolate, mostly mentally. We just can't handle it. And so why would we think that being isolated from each other and not shaking hands and not hardly making eye contact and having to stay in your home would not have detrimental effects? Kevin, I was criticized early on because the economy was the thing I saw, too, that was the greatest danger. Without all your expertise, it just intuitively, I knew that we were, it was going to be terrible. I was accused, and it was a personal accusation, which was that all I cared about is money, which is, if anyone knew me really well, would know that's not true. But how do you make the case? Say you're talking about opening up the economy and get people back to work, jobs, 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 as opposed to people dying from this virus. How do you make the case that the economy is just as important a consideration?
Well, it's actually life that's an important consideration. Remember what Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. Right now, unfortunately, the progressive left is saying, oh, you can have all my liberties, just don't let me die. The problem is that people were willing to sacrifice their lives for economic freedom. It's an American experiment that has never been seen anywhere in the world, this type of liberty that we enjoy. And people laid their lives down and were the best and the brightest and the strongest in early days in the Revolutionary War and all the way up through every war we fought for liberty. And you cannot have liberty unless you have economic liberty. So the first point is that we're not just talking about saving money or making money. Poverty is a death sentence for a lot of people. So what the American engine has produced is the greatest escape from poverty in the history of the world. And as we've escaped from poverty, we've seen improved living standards. People have lived longer and better. So it's not just about money. It's about preserving and keeping the American system. And the second thing is that there's very practical truths to if you lock people in and they have no hope. A lot of people I've talked to, retired people, say, you know what, I'd rather face the risk of the virus. And they are at a high risk, the retired, the elderly among us. They say, I'd rather face the risk of the virus than to have all of my savings wiped out so that I live in abject poverty. But even more importantly, I want to pass on the future opportunity of America to my children and to my grandchildren, and I would rather die or face death risk than to know that my children and grandchildren will grow up not just in poverty, but probably under totalitarian rule. We're facing an existential choice here. Are we going to go the path of America and liberty and independent individual spirit, or are we going to go the path of totalitarian control and poverty? I'll tell you where I stand. I'd rather risk it, and that's where people throughout our history as a nation have chosen that. And people choose that now. I'd rather escape Cuba and go on a boat and risk my life knowing that there's odds that I might die. I'd rather do that to get to the freedom of America. If we lost America, the world goes down.
You know, Kevin, it's funny that you should quote Patrick Henry, because that's exactly what came to my mind when I was early on trying to defend this. I said, look, this is about freedom. Why did Patrick Henry say, give me liberty or give me death? What was he talking about? Wasn't that crazy? Because in our culture, it's death is the worst. We isolate. We put our seniors in senior living facilities and they can't have guests. They can't get out. And that's supposed to be better to keep them alive than letting them live their last days. I had a friend, by the way, who lost her husband suddenly of a massive heart attack night before last. And she could not be with him. She took him to the hospital. They took him inside, and he died without her because she couldn't go in. This has got to stop. This is just inhumane. And it is certainly the burden does fall on us who believe in something beyond this life to take the opportunity to explain why death should not, where is thy sting? And grave, where is thy victory? I'm speaking as a Christian, of course. Those of us that know Christ and really serve him are not afraid of death. I understand that makes it maybe somehow easier for us, but I think we need to explain that this life is not all there is, and we don't give up everything just to live so that we can live by ourselves in a room and die by ourselves. It's just the most insidious thing that's happening to our country. My guest is Kevin Freeman, Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman on Blaze TV. And by the way, you have to see Kevin's latest on how we need to start, what's happening to the economy. It's economicwarroom.com. And also my guest, Benjamin Newsma. We'll be back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Blessed is the man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scoffers. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. One word has proven to be debilitating in our society, the D word, discrimination. What we fail to realize is discrimination is not automatically a dirty concept. We discriminate against thieves and murderers when we send them to prison. We discriminate against sexual predators by keeping them away from children. And yes, we rightly discriminate against men when we keep them out of women's restrooms. According to Psalm 1, we have to discriminate against the counsel of the wicked in order to be blessed. Good thing God isn't debilitated by the D word.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Governors across the country are looking to open their states in hopes of allowing those who have lost their jobs and livelihood a chance to get back to work. AFR would like to tell the stories of working-class Americans who've had their businesses and lives impacted by the economic shutdown. We would also like to hear stories of those who've had their religious freedom limited due to the various orders across the country. Email us at mystory@afr.net.
This is Franklin Graham. As news about the coronavirus seems to worsen, many people are feeling overwhelmed, anxious, even fearful. We want to help. At the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, we have a prayer line that's open 24/7. We have staff who would love to speak with you, pray with you. Remember, God loves you.
Call 1-888-388-2683. That's 1-888-388-2683. Or visit billygraham.org.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Some people think the ideal Christian woman is mousy and meek, but the truth is quite different. Proverbs 31 says an excellent wife is a woman who has earned the complete trust of her husband. She does him good all her life and makes him a success. She is not afraid of hard work, rising while it is still night to provide food for her family, and her lamp does not go out at night. She has an excellent sense of judgment and may even start a successful business in real estate or in clothing. She is known for her generosity to the poor. She carries herself with dignity and strength, has a good sense of humor, and her speech is filled with wisdom and kindness. No wonder the Bible says that her children rise to their feet and call her blessed, and her husband does too. Truly a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In this pandemic crisis, President Trump is wrestling with unenviable choices, including immigration, reopening the country, maintaining the Navy's readiness, and the investment of federal retirement funds in malevolent communist Chinese companies. Mr. Trump has to balance competing interests, often involving public health considerations versus the need to resuscitate the economy and/or protect the national security. If there is any rule of thumb as to how to resolve such dilemmas, it probably should be America first. In practice, that would mean we should do the following. Put all foreign immigration on hold for 60 days. Implement the phased reopening plan Mr. Trump announced last week, supported by aggressive use of promising therapies to reduce the risks, especially for the Navy and other military services to maintain readiness. And don't underwrite our enemies by investing public pension funds in problematic communist Chinese businesses. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As
As of today, fewer than 1 in 500 Americans have a confirmed case of COVID-19, and fewer than 1 in 13,000 have died. Yet 1 in 10 Americans have already lost their job, and we're about to get to 1 in 5. While no one disputes the seriousness of the virus, we've turned out the lights for much of our country's economy. Every day counts. Our economic shutdowns are causing suicides, increased crime and domestic violence, and many small veteran, woman-owned, and minority businesses are going under. It's not about lives versus money. It's about lives versus lives. We need to get the small businesses and employees a voice. It's time to restart now.
It's Benjamin Newsma, who's our guest, and that is the Navigo video on their homepage. Navigo is trying to get the economy to start now, and the name of the project is Restart Now. And we just discovered during the break the best way to get to their website and also then to the Indigo page where you can help is restartnow.io. Restartnow.io/, and then you can get from there to the Indigo GoGo page if you want to donate. And why would you want to donate? Ben, you're going to have to tell us what it is you're doing. Explain to us what you would do. If you got the money that you needed, what would you do?
We are working to build out these plans for each and every one of our 50 states, and we show on a county-by-county level where we can start opening up immediately from a risk standpoint. So that's one thing we would do is we would build the entire 50 states. The second thing that we would do is start adding additional data pieces like violent crime increases, mental health issues, and related. You already know about suicide.
Yes, and so have you made contact now? Have you gotten the ear of some of the states?
We have gotten the ear of a number of the legislators, and most of them haven't talked directly with us, but we've actually had some direct emails from some folks saying, hey, can you please build out our state? It's looking like we're in this for the long haul, and we need some data to help us make our case.
Kevin Freeman, a host of Economic War Room. Kevin, what do you see as the benefit? Because I know that you've been working with Benjamin, and help us to understand, help people to understand why you think this is so important.
Well, Sandy, I've taken this to the White House. I've taken this to national security people that I know and, you know, all the people that we work with. And bottom line is they're not able to trust the data that they're getting. The models that we've been given are complete miserable failures. As Benjamin mentioned earlier, garbage in, garbage out. At one point, they told us that 2 million people in the United States were expected to die from this virus. That's clearly not the case. It's not going to ever be the case. But the devastation to our economy is so great. Now you're sitting in the governor's office and you're starting to throw out these dictates. I'm going to mandate that you do this and mandate that you do that. It's very arbitrary. We're losing our liberties. We've got to protect those. And then you have people like Nancy Pelosi, and I think you played a clip earlier. She's sitting in her mansion in San Francisco with her two huge freezers full of $10 a pint, $12 a pint ice cream. Somebody delivered that ice cream to her. Somebody brought it to her and put themselves at risk. And what we're finding over and over and over, it's minorities. Minorities have started and built businesses, been part of the American dream, and all of a sudden their business is shut down. I've got to do something else. So they go work for Amazon, and they're doing the grocery delivery and everything else. And they're finding they're at increased risk. They're going out and putting themselves at risk, delivering all that. They would be healthier, safer, better off if they had their original business open and they could stay in their engineering job, go to the office or whatever, but they're being forced into poverty. And that's where all Americans are destined for poverty if we don't open up. So let's do it a smart way. And the smart way is maximize saving of lives, sheltering the truly vulnerable. And the second thing is using data to determine this economy can open and will save more lives than it costs us. But we have to make sure the data is pure, and that's why I begged Benjamin, set this up where the American people can step forward and fund this. It doesn't take a lot of money. Sandy, your listeners alone, if every one of your listeners gave $1 or $2 or whatever, it would probably make all the difference in the world, and they can go to that page and do it. But if we let big data do it, you know they will drive us in wrong directions. They will use it for political purposes, and so the call here is You can vote. I want the smart opening of our economy, and I want it to happen now by going to restartnow.io and then clicking on the Indiegogo link, help fund our campaign, and give $10. And you can say, I would like you to help me open up my state, Kansas. Show me what the data is. In Texas, I think it's like we'd save $90 billion if we opened today as opposed to waiting 30 days from now. It's that powerful and that dramatic, and we can save lives if we do it smartly, and that's why everyone should support this.
Yes, and I would also add to that, Kevin, this is something else that I track, and you probably do too, is that there is this big move to do mail-in ballots, and we know that's working in conjunction with their narrative that, oh, coronavirus is coming back. If we have to open up now, if we have to kind of put up with some of those red states opening up, then we're going to have to shut everything down again in November. That's what they want to do because they want mail-in balloting because they want to take back power in the federal government. And that's just a fact. And so there is so much at stake. If this information could get to your states and your governors could use it to help fight against that powerful narrative, which even, like I said, the headlines on Fox this morning all supported that narrative that, oh, it's terrible. There's going to be another wave of it. It could be worse in November, and carrying the water, really, for the elite left narrative that comes out of the regular media. You could counter that. This is something you could do. You could go to restartnow.io/restartnow.io, and you could look at what they're doing and also then give them just a little bit of money to help. Let me pass by both of you a polling piece I got from Rasmussen just this morning. And this kind of frightens me, to be honest with you guys. It says, to fight the pandemic, has the government assumed too much power over people's lives, too little power, or just the right amount? The answer, 28% too much power, 17% too little power, 41% just the right amount, and 13% not sure. So in other words, those that think too little power and just the right amount are 58% of those polled. I think we have, as they would say, Houston, we have a problem because people are not with us. They haven't come along with us on this. Benjamin, your response to that?
I think that one of the things that we need to get a lot better at is the concept of meta-narrative. And so what people don't realize is that there are pithy little sayings that get used to persuade people to concepts very much like the four legs good, two legs bad from Animal Farm. And so social distance, flatten the curve, those are two very powerful meta-narratives, and everybody can take and picture this curve, but what very few people did is ask what the curve represented. And what the curve specifically represents is hospital capacity. And because we didn't track hospital capacity, we didn't figure out a number of the areas that actually didn't have to close.
Yes,
so
and
go ahead. So what we need to do is come up with meta-narratives that help explain in the simplest fashion possible what we're doing and why it benefits them.
Yeah, I heard it put this way by a psychologist friend of mine. He said, we have to make people more afraid. And this doesn't mean manipulation. This is reality. The reality is we have more reasons to be afraid of the economic fallout. This is the greater danger than the coronavirus. It just is. Kevin, you do a great job of this on your economic war room. And by the way, let me just say, Kevin, you can find... Actually, most people that watch this have to be subscribers to The Blaze, but they've kind of opened it up right now, as I understand, right, Kevin?
That's right. This particular program we put on our website, economicwarroom.com. You don't have to be a subscriber to The Blaze. If you want to be, you can go to Blaze TV and use our code ECON and get $30 off right now, which is the biggest discount. But you can watch this particular episode for free, and you can download our 50-plus page battle plan, economic battle plan with action steps. It explains the problem and action steps of how to address it, both from that webpage. But, Sandy, if I could, let me say, knowledge is power. And not only is this data tool that Benjamin's talking about available to policymakers, it's on a website that every person can go and look at their state and say, if we open today, how many lives would be lost and how much money will be saved and how many lives will be saved if we open now versus waiting 30 days. And they can see it at the county-by-county level. And I think that's an important point. That's why we made this show free, is we want everyone to have the knowledge. Otherwise, the data models are manipulative. They're controlling us. We don't know what's going on because they don't give us the data. They just give us the headline, and then they lead us like sheep with that headline.
Yes, and in fact, Brian, let me ask you this. I thought it very odd. I still think it very odd. To my knowledge, we still don't know who did those original models that predicted 200,000, a million deaths in the United States.
Oh, we do.
Do we know? We do now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so who are they?
I'd have to actually look it up, but there are some lists of creators directly on the model page. So one of them was COVID Act Now, for example. And it's people from these large tech companies who certainly have a political agenda behind it, would be my argument. So we know some of the people who are behind the models. And again, their particular impetus behind them was they wanted legislators to act quickly. They wanted to bring about very rapid change, even if it takes and it negatively impacts, millions and millions of people. And that's where having the right data, having accurate data, is so important, because for the legislators, for the different decision makers, They need something as a backstop behind them. They need something that they can use to push against the scary models that they were shown previously. And, of course, the argument's going to be we can't open up again because somebody might get sick or somebody might die. And, of course, that's a complete bait and switch. The reason to social distance and the reason to then do the shutdown was to flatten the curve to prevent us from overwhelming our hospital capacity. And thankfully, throughout most of the country, that's not a problem. And so now we've done a very, very clever sleight of hand, and unfortunately, I would say at least half of Americans have bought it, and they've bought that, oh, we just can't open back up, somebody might get sick. Well, I can tell you that, you might know somebody who's had it. You might know somebody who's died for it. And it's very sad when this is a real disease. This is not something that somebody made up. But I guarantee you, you know people who have lost their businesses, and you know people who have lost their lives because it is now so prevalent comparatively. One other interesting thing that I wanted to point out is on the CDC's own website for suicide prevention, the number one strategy that they mention as far as helping people prevent suicide is to strengthen economic support, which includes strengthening household financial security and housing stabilization policies.
Isn't that ironic?
That is fascinating because their advice in this situation is causing completely the opposite.
I just gave you one of the stats from Rasmussen, and actually the others, I'm very concerned, and what I'm seeing with my own eyes is people irrationally wearing, well, this is my thought, because I'm kind of angry about this, to be honest with you, and I have to watch not going too far the other direction, but I see people with masks still. It's like they're, aren't you listening? Aren't you watching? Haven't you learned by now that, first of all, we're past the peak, if you just want to talk about the virus, but people are not learning. Kevin, you hear the music. Are you getting really good response from your program, Economic War Room?
Oh, absolutely. People love to have the information because they've been lied to, and they don't want to be lied to anymore. They need the truth, and that's what we're getting out, the truth.
Okay, economicwarroom.com, economicwarroom.com with Kevin Freeman on Blaze TV, and that's where you can find it. And also then, restartnow.io, if you want to help get some good data for your states, because that's where it has to stop, to help your governors. to do the right thing. And that's what this is all about. So if you can, you know, pull out a check for $10 or your credit card, I think you probably could do that. I'm going to do the same. And so Kevin Freeman and Benjamin Newsma, thank you so much for all of your time this morning. And God bless each of you as you continue to do the work that you're equipped to do. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.